Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week, we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us as we travel this week to Canada. Canada is the second largest country in the world. English and French are both spoken in Canada. While it was originally settled by many different Indian nations, both the French and the English laid claim to it in the 1600s. The name Canada comes from the word Kanata, which means settlement or village in the Iroquois language. There are over 30,000 lakes in Canada, and it can get very cold there, as low as 40 degrees below zero in some parts of the country. For further information about Canada for children, I suggest www.sciencekids.co.nz. Our first story is a Canadian folk tale. Here is Rabbit and the Indian Chief. Long ago, an Indian chief was living with his people far in the Canadian forest. Life was good and food was plentiful, and the people were all very happy. But one day, a wicked giant and his old witch wife came crashing into the land from a far country beyond the prairies. They devoured all the food they could lay their hands on, and soon there was little left to eat in all the country. And often they carried off little children to their hiding place and ate them up until not a trace of them remained. Somewhere far in the forest, they dwelt in a hidden cave. They slept all day long, but at night they always stalked forth in search of plunder. The chief was much troubled, and with his warriors he tried in every way to discover their hiding place, but no one ever succeeded in finding it. For by the use of their magic power, the giant and his old witch wife could make themselves invisible when they walked abroad among men, and they could not be caught. The chief called all his warriors to a council, and he said, "Who can rid me of this pest? Who can kill the giant?" But not a man replied, and when he saw his people's store of food rapidly growing smaller, and the little children of his tribe slowly disappearing, he was greatly puzzled as to what he should do. One night of bright moonlight, Rabbit was prowling through the woods, as was his custom, in search of someone on whom he could play a prank, for he was a great joker. Suddenly, he came upon the giant and his old witch wife standing by an opening in the side of a low mountain. He watched them for a long time from the shadow of a great tree, and at last he saw them enter a large hole in the side of the hill. He knew now that he had hit, by accident, upon the giant's cave, and he was well pleased by his discovery. But he kept his secret to himself, for he thought, "Here's a good chance for me to win fame. I will kill the giants by a crafty trick, and I will then be looked upon as a great warrior, the foremost in all the land, for all the chief's men have failed to find the giants." So he went to the chief, and he said, "Oh, chief, I know where the giants live, and I swear to you that I am going to kill them. It is I alone who can rid you of these pests." "You?" said the chief in great surprise. "Little harm the like of you can do to giants. They will eat you up in one mouthful." And he laughed loudly at Rabbit's boldness, and he called to his warrior, saying, "See what a stout fellow we have here. Little Rabbit says he can do what we have failed to do. He swears that he will kill the giants. He is better fitted to kill a mouse." And they all laughed in loud ha-ha's at Rabbit's vanity. Poor Rabbit's pride was deeply hurt by the chief's scorn and the warrior's cruel laughter, but it all made him more determined than ever to slay the thieving giants. So he went to an old woman who lived nearby and said, "Give me an old faded dress and a ragged old shawl and your colored spectacles and a hat with a feather in it." The old woman wondered what tricks he was up to now, but she gave him what he asked for. He put on the tattered old dress and the battered old hat with a red feather sticking from the top, and he wrapped the old shawl about his face, and he wore the woman's colored spectacles, and he carried a crooked stick. And dressed in this fashion, he set out towards evening for the giant's home. When he reached the mouth of the cave, he stood still and waited, leaning on his crooked stick, for night was coming on, and he knew that the giants would soon be going out on their plundering rounds. After a time, when it was quite dark except for the moonlight, the giant's old witch wife came out of the cave. When she saw Rabbit in the dim light, she said gruffly, "Who are you standing there in the shadows?"
"Oh, my dear niece," said Rabbit, "I have found you at last. I am your poor old aunt. I thought I had lost my way. I have come to see you from your home in the far country. It was a long journey, and my poor old legs and back are stiff and sore, and I'm very hungry and tired." And he moved slowly towards the woman, hobbling along with his crooked stick.
The giant woman was deceived, and she threw her arms around Rabbit and kissed him, and she did not feel his whiskers or his split lip because of the old shawl that was wrapped around his face.
"I have a pain in my jaw from sleeping out of doors," said Rabbit, "and I must keep my face wrapped up."
"Come in and rest, and you will soon feel better," said the giant woman.
"You'll have to lead me in," said Rabbit, not wishing to take off the shawl, "for my eyesight is very bad."
So she led Rabbit into the warm cave, which was so dark that they could scarcely see each other, and she called her husband and said,
"Here's my dear old aunt who has come all the way from the far country beyond the prairies."
And the giant, believing Rabbit to be his wife's kindred, for he could not see him very clearly, treated him very kindly, and they showed him the bed where he was to sleep. The woman then gave Rabbit a large piece of dried meat to eat, but Rabbit said,
"I can't eat it, for I'm old and I've lost all my teeth. Give me an axe to cut it up with, so I can make it small."
So the woman brought him a sharp axe, and he chopped the meat into small pieces and ate it all up. And he said,
"I'll keep the axe by me, for I shall need it at all my meals."
And he placed it beside his bed. The giant said, "We are going away to see some friends, but we shall be back before midnight." But before they went away, Rabbit said to the woman,
"I hope your husband sleeps soundly. I have a bad cough, and I sometimes moan because of the pain in my face and head, and I do not wish to disturb him."
And the old giant woman answered,
"He slumbers too well. When we sleep, we both snore loudly, and when you hear us snoring, you may cough as much as you please, for then you'll know that we are sound asleep."
Then the man and his witch wife went away. When the giants came home, Rabbit pretended to be fast asleep. They brought back with them much food, which they hid in a secret place at the side of the cave. Rabbit watched them through the holes in the old shawl around his head. Soon they went to bed, drowsy after their fat meal. When Rabbit heard them snoring loudly, like a great waterfall, he arose very quietly and crept softly to their bedside. With two blows of his axe, he killed the giant and his wife, one after the other. Then he ran away as fast as he could, carrying with him his old dress and hat and shawl, for he thought he might need them again. In the morning he went to the chief's house and told the chief what he had done. The chief laughed scornfully, and he would not believe it until Rabbit brought him to the cave and showed him the slain giants, cold and stiff, in their bed. So Rabbit took the chief and his men and showed them the cave. The giants were indeed quite stiff in their beds. The chief's men then took back to the village the great store of food the giants had hidden in the secret place. But the chief and his warriors, although they were glad to be rid of the thieves, were angry at heart because Rabbit, whom they had laughed at, had done what they had failed to do, for they were very jealous of Rabbit's power. One day soon afterwards, the chief called all the birds and the animals to a council, and he said,
"Now that the giants who robbed us of our food are dead and gone, and that we shall never again want for nourishment in my country, I am going to let each animal and bird choose the kind of food he would most like to live on if he could get it. And they shall never want for that kind of food if it can be provided."
And he called on each to make the choice. And the bird said,
"Grain and seeds and worms."
And the squirrel said, "Nuts." And the fox said, "Chickens." And the cat said,
"Milk."
And the dog said, "Meat and bones." And the weasel said, "Eggs."
And the wolf said, "Lambs." And the bear said, "Fish from the frozen sea." And so on, until each animal was called upon and declared his liking. And the chief said, "It shall be as you have chosen." But the chief had purposely neglected to summon poor Rabbit to the council, as Rabbit was absent on a long journey. When he came home, he was very angry when he heard what had happened, for only the leftover in the world's food remained for him to choose. So he went to the chief and said in great wrath, "This is a fine return for ridding your land of giants, but that is a way you have. You always reward good deeds with evil." The chief was very angry because of Rabbit's insolence, and he said, "You are telling lies again." But Rabbit called as witnesses to the truth of what he said, sheep and goat and duck, who chanced to be passing by and who stood listening to the quarrel. And old Sheep said, "Rabbit has spoken truly. When I was young, I gave the chief much wool to make clothes for his back, and he used me well. But now that I am old, he's going to kill me and eat me up. That is my reward." And old Goat said, "Rabbit has spoken wisely and justly. I served the chief well in my time and gave him milk. But now that I am old and have no more milk, he is fattening me and getting me ready for slaughter. That is my reward." And old Duck said, "That is true saying of Rabbit. Once upon a time I gave the chief many eggs and young ducklings, but now that I have stopped laying, he is soon going to roast me in a pot. That is my reward." The chief could make no answer to these charges, for he knew them to be true, and he offered to do what was in his power for Rabbit. But Rabbit refused to make choice of food, for he said the best was already gone. He sulked for many months and lived alone by his own efforts as best as he could. At last, he decided to take vengeance on the chief, and he hit, as was his custom, on a crafty trick. The chief had an old bear, which he prized very highly, for the bear did for him many wondrous tricks and brought laughter to him and his warriors when he danced at their feasts. In those olden times, Bear had a long bushy tail of which he was very proud. One day, as Rabbit sat on the ice fishing, for it was now winter, Bear came along. There was to be a feast that night, and he was going to dance for the chief, and he was in very good spirits.
"Where did you get all the fine fish?"
he asked, for he was a great fish eater. "I caught them through the hole in the ice," said Rabbit. "It's very easy. Just drop your tail down through the hole, and it will soon be covered with fine big fish." Bear did as he was told, and he sat on the ice for a long time waiting for his prey. He sat so long that the hole froze up, for it was very cold, and in it was frozen poor Bear's long bushy tail. "Now," said Rabbit, "jump quick, for many fish are hanging to you." Bear jumped with all his might, but his tail was held fast in the ice, and it broke off close to the root. Rabbit laughed in great glee and ran away, and poor Bear howled with pain and shame. He could not dance at the feast because his stub of a tail was sore, and the chief and the warriors were very angry at Rabbit because he had harmed their dancing pet. And since that time, Bear has had a short, stubby tail, which to this day he tries to wag feebly. Rabbit then hid for some days, far from the chief and his warriors. Then he decided to try another trick. The chief's woodcutter was old Beaver, who lived in a little house of reeds on the bank of a stream. He was very busy now cutting down trees for the chief, for it was near to springtime, and the people were in need of logs for building roads over the rivers. One day, Rabbit went to Beaver and said, "The chief sent me to you to bring you to a great tree he wishes you to cut down at once." So Beaver went along with him. But when Beaver was busy at his task, cutting down the tree, Rabbit hit him with a savage blow on the head with a big stick, hoping to kill him and thus again to anger the chief. Poor Beaver fell to the ground and Rabbit ran away. But Beaver was only stunned. He got up after a time and went home muttering to himself and rubbing his sore head. Soon, Rabbit came back to the tree and found Beaver gone. He knew that his blow had failed. Then he put on again his tattered old dress and his ragged shawl and his colored spectacles and the hat with the red feather sticking to the top, and he went to Beaver's house by the stream, hobbling along with a stick.
The chief sent me to you to bring you to a great tree he wishes you to cut down at once, he called.
And Beaver said,
I've already tried to cut a great tree for him today, and I should have finished it had I not been beaten with a stick until I was stunned by the blow.
Who struck you? Asked Rabbit, laughing to himself.
Rabbit struck me, answered Beaver.
He is a great brigand and a liar and a thief, said Rabbit.
He is all that, said Beaver, rubbing the lump on his head.
So Beaver went along with Rabbit, and Rabbit asked as they went along,
How is it that you're alive after that cruel blow?
And Beaver said, Rabbit hit me on the head. If he'd hit me on the back of my neck, he would have killed me, for there I keep the secret of my life.
When Beaver was busy again at his task cutting down the tree, Rabbit hit him a powerful blow on the back of his neck, and poor Beaver fell down dead. Then he cut off his tail that was made like a file, and went away happy, for he knew that the chief would be very angry when he found out what had happened to his woodcutter. When the chief learned that Beaver had been killed, his wrath knew no bounds, for he could ill afford at this time to lose his best woodchopper. He blamed Rabbit for the deed, but he could not be sure that his suspicions were well-founded. Rabbit kept out of the chief's sight for some weeks, but one day in early summer he was very hungry. He saw all the other animals filling their bellies with their favorite food, and he decided to forget his sulks and to ask the chief for help. So he went to the chief and said haughtily, I want you to give me food for my own special use as you have done with the other animals. You must do it at once, or I will do you much harm. Then the chief remembered what Rabbit had done to his dancing bear, and he thought of the death of Beaver, for which he blamed Rabbit without proof, and he grew red with anger. He seized Rabbit by the heels and said, Henceforth the dogs will always chase you, and you will never have peace when they are near, and you will live for the most part on whatever food I throw you into now. Then he whirled Rabbit around his head by the heels, and he threw him from him with great force, hoping to drop him in a great black swamp nearby. Poor Rabbit went flying through the air for a great distance, farther than the chief had hoped, and he dropped with a thud into a field of clover, on the edge of which cabbages and lettuce were growing. And since that time, the dogs have always chased Rabbit, and he has lived for the most part on cabbages and lettuce and clover, which he steals on moonlit nights from farmers' fields. This next story is a short one. It's an Eskimo legend from the far northern region of Canada. Here is The Two Friends Who Set Off to Travel Round the World. Once there were two men who desired to travel around the world, that they might tell others what was the manner of it. This was in the days when men were still many on the earth, and there were people in all the lands. Now we grow fewer and fewer. Evil and sickness have come upon men. The two men who were setting out had each newly taken a wife, and had as yet no children. They made themselves cups of musk ox horn, each taking a cup for himself from one side of the same beast's head. And they set out, each going away from the other, that they might go by different ways and meet again some day. They traveled with sledges and chose land to stay and live upon each summer. It took them a long time to get round the world. They had children, and they grew old, and then their children also grew old, until at last the parents were so old that they could not walk, but the children led them. And at last one day they met, and of their drinking horns there was but the handle left. So many times had they drunk water by the way, scraping the horn against the ground as they filled them. The world is great indeed, they said when they met. They had been young at their starting, and now they were old men led by their children. Truly, the world is great. Our last story is another Indian legend. Here is The Boy of the Red Twilight Sky. Long ago there dwelt on the shores of the great water in the west a young man and his younger wife. They had no children, and they lived all by themselves, far from other people, on an island not far from the coast. The man spent his time in catching the deep sea fish far out on the ocean, or in spearing salmon in the distant rivers. Often he was gone for many days, and his wife was very lonely in his absence. She was not afraid, for she had a stout spirit, but it was very dismal in the evenings to look only at the gray leaden sky and to hear only the sound of the surf as it beat upon the beach. So day after day she said to herself, "I wish we had children. They would be good company for me when I'm alone and my husband is far away." One evening at twilight, when she was solitary because of her husband's absence on the ocean catching the deep sea fish, she sat on the sand beach looking out across the water. The sky in the west was pale gray. It was always dull and gray in that country, and when the sun had gone down, there was no soft light. In her loneliness, the woman said to herself, "I wish we had children to keep me company." A kingfisher with his children was diving for minnows not far away, and the woman said, "Oh, seabird with the white collar, I wish I had children like you." And the kingfisher said, "Look in the seashells, look in the seashells," and flew away. The next evening, the woman sat again upon the beach, looking westward at the dull gray sky. Not far away, a white seagull was riding on the waves in the midst of her brood of little ones. And the woman said, "Oh, white seabird, I wish we had children like you to keep us company." And the seagull said, "Look in the seashells, look in the seashells," and flew away. The woman wondered greatly at the words of the kingfisher and the seagull. As she sat there and thought, she heard a strange cry coming from the sand dunes behind her. She went closer to the sound and found that the cry came from a large seashell lying on the sand. She picked up the shell, and inside of it was a tiny boy crying as hard as he could. She was well pleased with her discovery, and she carried the baby to her home and cared for him. When her husband came home from the sea, he too was very happy to find the baby there, for he knew that they would be lonely no more. The baby grew very rapidly, and soon he was able to walk and move about where he pleased. One day, the woman was wearing a copper bracelet on her arm, and the child said to her, "I must have a bow made from the copper on your arm." So, to please him, she made him a tiny bow from the bracelet and two tiny arrows. At once, he set out to hunt game, and day after day he came home bearing the products of his chase. He brought home geese and ducks and brant and small seabirds, and he gave them to his mother for food. As he grew older, the man and his wife noticed that his face took on a golden hue, brighter than the color of his copper bow. Wherever he went, there was a strange light. When he sat on the beach looking to the west, the weather was always calm, and there were strange bright gleams upon the water. And his foster parents wondered greatly at this unusual power, but the boy would not talk about it. When they spoke of it, he was always silent. It happened once that the winds blew hard over the great water, and the man could not go out to catch fish because of the turbulent sea. For many days he stayed on shore, for the ocean, which was usually at peace, was lashed into a great fury, and the waves were dashing high on the beach. Soon the people were in need of fish for food, and the boy said, "I will go out with you, for I can overcome the storm spirit." The man did not want to go, but at last he listened to the boy's entreaties, and together they set out for the fishing grounds far across the tossing sea. They had not gone far when they met the spirit of the storm coming madly from the southwest where the great winds dwelt. He tried hard to upset their boat, but over them he had no power, for the boy guided the frail craft across the water, and all around them the sea was calm and still. Then the storm spirit called his nephew, Black Cloud, to help him, and away in the southeast they saw him hurrying to his uncle's aid. But the boy said to the man, "Be not afraid, for I am more than a match for him." So the two met, but when Black Cloud saw the boy, he quickly disappeared. Then the spirit of the storm called Mist of the Sea to come and cover the water, for he thought the boat would be lost if he hid the land from the man and the boy. When the man saw Mist of the Sea coming, like a gray vapor across the water, he was very frightened, for of all his enemies on the ocean, he feared this one most. But the boy said, "He cannot harm you when I am with you." And sure enough, when Mist of the Sea saw the boy sitting smiling in the boat, he disappeared as quickly as he had come. And the storm spirit, in great anger, hurried away to other parts, and that day there was no more danger on the sea near the fishing grounds. The boy and the man soon reached the fishing grounds in safety, and the boy taught his foster father a magic song with which he was able to lure fish to his nets. Before evening came, the boat was filled with good, fat fish, and they set out for their home. The man said, "Tell me the secret of your power." But the boy said, "It is not yet time." The next day, the boy killed many birds. He skinned them all and dried their skins. Then he dressed himself in the skin of a plover and rose into the air and flew above the sea, and the sea under him was gray like his wings. Then he came down and dressed himself in the skin of a blue jay, and he soared away again, and the sea over which he was flying was at once changed to blue, like the blue of his wings. When he came back to the beach, he put on the skin of a robin with the breast of a golden hue like his face. Then he flew high, and at once the waves under him reflected a color as of fire, and bright gleams of light appeared upon the ocean, and the sky in the west was golden red. The boy flew back to the beach, and he said to his foster parents, "Now it is time for me to leave you. I am the offspring of the sun. Yesterday my power was tested, and it was not found wanting. So now I must go away, and I shall see you no more. But at evening I shall appear to you often in the twilight sky in the west, and when the sky and the sea look at evening like the color of my face, you will know that there will be no wind nor storm, and that on the morrow the weather will be fair. But although I go away, I shall leave you a strange power. And always when you need me, let me know your desires by making white offerings to me, so that I may see them from my home far in the west." Then he gave his foster mother a wonderful robe. He bade his parents goodbye and soared away to the west, leaving them in sadness. But the woman still keeps a part of the power he gave her, and when she sits on the island in a crevice in the dunes and loosens her wonderful robe, the wind hurries down from the land, and the sea is ruffled with storm, and the more she loosens the garment, the greater is the tempest. But in the late autumn, when the cold mists come in from the sea, and the evenings are chill, and the sky is dull and gray, she remembers the promise of the boy, and she makes to him an offering of tiny white feathers plucked from the breasts of birds. She throws them into the air, and they appear as flakes of snow and rise thickly into the winds. And they hurry westward to tell the boy that the world is gray and dreary as it yearns for the sight of his golden face. Then he appears to the people of earth. He comes at evening and lingers often after the sun has gone, until the twilight sky is red and the ocean in the west has gleams of golden light. And the people then know that there will be no wind, and that on the morrow the weather will be fair, as he promised them long ago. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at guima@kciw.org. That's guima@kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll be traveling to Russia, the largest country in the world, with vast plains spread across the earth, and the great witch Baba Yaga still scares little children in her house that runs around on chicken legs. Stay safe, have fun, and let your imagination soar. This is Guima saying goodbye and happy reading. This has been a production of KCIWLP 100.7 FM in beautiful Brookings, Oregon.